from WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The polls closed in Britain's national election just a few hours ago. Early results indicate that Prime Minister Tony Blair is headed for a historic third term at the head of a victorious Labour Party. But there's a sting in the victory as well. Blair appears headed for re-election with a sharply reduced Labour majority in Parliament. The election campaign season was all about Tony Blair, especially about his bitterly criticized support for the Iraq War. Blair stood side by side with George W. Bush in the push to war, and he took a public beating at home for it, as nearly everyone, it seemed, even conservatives, took him to task. Here's how Blair responded late yesterday to warnings that Iraq might cost him the election.
If you end up with a conservative MP and then a conservative government, not the thing you're protesting about that's going to change. It's the strong economy, the investment in the health service, in the schools, in Sure Start.
In the end, he pulled it out this evening. As exit poll results come in, it looks like Britain is standing by Tony Blair, but not so firmly this time. He has polarized Britain, gone his own way to war, paid a political price, and lived to tell the tale. He is a powerful political chameleon who transformed his Labour Party and his country. And tomorrow, it appears, Tony Blair will celebrate his 52nd birthday by making history with three terms. Tonight on Point, the British at the polls and the curious case of Tony Blair. We begin in London for a look at results and exit polls as they come in. Joining us now is Frederick Studeman, UK correspondent for the Financial Times. Frederick Studeman, thanks for being with us tonight.
Hi there.
So what is known at this hour about the election results?
Well, so far we know really two things. One, we have these exit polls, which you always have to treat with a degree of caution, but they show, as you've said in your introduction, that Labour is on course to win, but that they're going to do so with a significantly reduced majority. That would be down from just over 160 seats in the House of Commons to around 66. The other thing we know is that we've had the declarations from the first constituencies. These are Labour strongholds, so they obviously can't be seen as indicative of of the national trend, but what we can pick up is that we are seeing the Labour vote down in each of these constituencies by differing degrees, however, ranging from just under 4% to around 9%.
Now, in your system, when do official results begin to come in?
These constituencies that are declaring are official results. It's just we have to go through the process of hearing declarations from 646 constituencies across Great Britain and in Northern Ireland. The Northern Irish constituencies actually only come in after tomorrow lunchtime. But what we're really waiting for is in the next 2-3 hours, you're going to see a slew of hundreds of constituencies declaring, and that's really when we're going to get a sense of which way it's really going.
But exit polls indicating Labour may come out of this with just a 66-seat majority in the 646-seat Parliament. Yeah. Who has picked up those seats that Labour's lost?
They've sort of gone mostly to the opposition Tories, and maybe with a few going to the Liberal Democrats. That's the third party here.
And what does it mean? Explain to us, Frederick Studeman, if Tony Blair comes in with a sharply reduced majority, it's a 5-year term, but it's a parliamentary system. Does it mean he's guaranteed those 5 years, or with a smaller majority, is he likely to hand over to someone else in the party earlier?
He's potentially vulnerable, yes, because he's, the first thing one should say is, by the way, by historical standards, 66-seat majorities used to be considered quite comfortable.
All right.
It's the fact that Blair had two massive landslide victories that we're all looking at this and going, oh, gosh, it's much smaller. You can go back in history and find people like Margaret Thatcher governing quite comfortably and quite radically on even smaller majorities.
So this is nothing like a razor's thin margin.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, that said, I mean, I think the difficulty for Mr. Blair is that he has difficulties within his own party, and there are quite a number of his own MPs who are opposed to some of his policies. They could kick up trouble. He could face opposition on his agenda to overhaul the public sector here, which is going to be the cornerstone for his third term. That rankles with a lot of the activists within the Labour Party who fear he's trying to sort of privatise the welfare state and so on. So it will be a rockier ride. His mandate will not be as secure. And as you suggested, that could indeed herald a sort of handover midterm, most likely to Gordon Brown, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, who's been his one of his closest allies in the past, but also one of his closest rivals.
All that said, it is history that's been made here with a Labour Prime Minister taking
indeed
a third term.
Labour have never done it before, three successive victories. It's actually quite rare to win three successive victories. Margaret Thatcher achieved it, but then you have to go way back quite a while before you find another Prime Minister who managed to do it. So yes, he's written himself into the history books.
When do you expect to hear from Tony Blair? Is it customary? Will he speak tonight, tomorrow?
He should speak tonight, and we will hear something in the next few hours, we hope.
And
then tomorrow morning, the procedure is that shortly before 10 o'clock our time, we expect to see him to speak to the press outside Downing Street, having come back from Buckingham Palace, where he will have seen the Queen, who will have formally asked him to form a new government. And in the afternoon, that's when it's going to really get interesting, because that is when he will make the big decisions on who the senior people will be in his new cabinet. And obviously, that's going to be quite closely anticipated.
And there's a lot we're going to be talking tonight, Frederick Studeman, but I guess on the American issue, given the narrower majority that Blair will now have in Parliament, given the tenor of the campaign, statements made, promises made, do you anticipate a change in his relationship with Washington?
I don't think we do yet. I think as we've seen in the last few months, I mean, it's certainly been slightly toned down a bit on both sides. I think you will also find that here people view, or certainly the UK government would like to say, that Mr. Blair has been very successful in getting the US on board on certain issues such as the Middle East, and bringing them round to what the Europeans would like to see as a more European position. I don't anticipate sort of huge changes there. Where you will probably see a change, I mean, is in the area of Britain's relationship with Europe. That's going to be the big and closest test of Mr. Blair in the next few months. For a variety of reasons, the UK is going to assume the presidency of the European Union for the second half of the year. There is a prospect that there will be a crisis within the European Union in the next few weeks if the French vote against a constitutional treaty that the European Union wants to adopt. These probably to the wider world seem like slightly sort of domesticated issues, but over here they are quite acute. And I think the focus, therefore, on the foreign policy agenda will initially be more European, though that shouldn't necessarily be interpreted as a sort of move away from the States.
But those are the issues that are looming as Tony Blair steps into a historic third term. Frederick Studeman, thank you so much for joining us tonight from London.
Okay.
Frederick Studeman, UK correspondent for the Financial Times, speaking with us there from London. We are talking tonight about the British at the polls and the curious case of Tony Blair. You can join the conversation. What do you make of Britain's history-making Labour Prime Minister? Join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Bath, England, is Geoffrey Wheatcroft, British journalist and historian, author of The Strange Death of Tory England. His recent op-ed in the Wall Street Journal was headlined Tony's Tories. Geoffrey Wheatcroft, thank you for being with us tonight.
Good evening.
Your interpretation of the exit polls we're seeing so far, a narrower majority for Tony Blair, yet a third term. How do you read what's happened?
Well, there was never any question that Tony Blair was going to lose this election. I mean, he has, over the past 4 weeks of the election campaign, it has merely been a question of how big he was going to win. The government, paradoxically, is not popular. He in particular, is personally unpopular. That's not an opinion of mine. I mean, every opinion poll confirms that. Mm. But he's going to win this third term, this third election, by default, because the opposition are still unelectable. The Tories are incapable of winning the election at present. The polls at the moment are extremely interesting, because the real imponderables at this election, given that Blair was going to win, he's going to win the largest number of votes, he's going to win the largest number of parliamentary seats, but the imponderables have been clearly whether the Labour vote itself would hold up, not whether the Tories would gain a large vote, because they were never going to, or whether there was going to be a defection from Labour, largely to do with Iraq, and also whether the third party, the Liberal Democrats, were going to do better than they have been doing in the polls for the last few months or indeed years. And the indications so far this evening, it's just gone midnight here, and we've only had four, there's one declaring at the moment, as I look at the silent television screen in Barnsley
yes.
Central.
Wait
that we've had four out of 646 actually declare. What we get is one by one, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it becomes extremely exciting after midnight as they start coming in, the individual constituencies, and then they cascade. But the early indications, which is rather like constructing an epic from three sentences or something, are that the Liberal Democrats are doing distinctly better than the polls have said, and that does look as though it may be the Iraq effect.
The Iraq effect, the unpopularity of the Iraq war, the Liberal Democrats against the Iraq war. Why have the
only party, remember, that you see, the Tory opposition, the Conservatives, did not oppose, they supported the war, so they cannot use that effectively, though they have tried to.
And the ineffectuality of the Conservatives in the UK, Margaret Thatcher dominated for so many years. Why are they flat on their back now, Geoffrey Wheatcroft?
Well, in a funny way, because of her. I mean, she, this is what I argue in my book, that though she performed an extraordinary, historically extraordinary feat in the 1980s, and she transformed the country without any question, for better or worse, most people think at least in some degree for better, she managed to wreck her own party in the process, not least or particularly after she ceased to be Prime Minister 15 years ago in 1990, and the party has become fractious and sour, and it's been it has recovered somewhat in recent years, but throughout the 1990s it did its best to tear itself apart, particularly over the question of relations with the European Union, and it has just looked at that. I mean, 10 years ago, it was a complete rabble. It has improved since then, but it still has not got back into a condition where it is electable.
And Tony Blair with another substantial victory tonight, but a reduced majority. Geoffrey Wheatcroft in Bath, England, please stand by. We're talking tonight about the British at the polls, a third term for Tony Blair, but an awful lot of unpopularity behind that victory. You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the British at the polls and the apparent third-term re-election, a historic re-election, consecutive third term for Labour Party Prime Minister of Tony Blair. Polls have closed there. Exit polls indicate that Blair will, and the Labour Party, will have a sharply reduced majority in Parliament, down from 160 to maybe 66. We'll see as official results come in the hours ahead. But already a fascinating result. Tony Blair has been beaten up on all sides in the British political conversation of the last 6 months or a year, but he has taken a third term as Prime Minister with a reduced majority. You can join our conversation tonight. What can Americans read into the apparent re-election victory of George Bush's closest international ally? Do you understand why Tony Blair is so viciously beaten up in the UK and so repeatedly elected? What is Tony Blair, first and foremost, to you? The man who went shoulder to shoulder to war in Iraq with George Bush? Or the Clinton-style torchbearer of a political middle way between old liberalism and old conservatism? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight from Bath, England, by Geoffrey Wheatcroft, British journalist and historian. His latest book is The Strange Death of Tory England. We're joined right now from New York as well by Tony Judd, professor of European Studies and director of the Remark Institute at New York University. Looks at U.S.-European relations. He's author of the forthcoming book, Postwar, A History of Europe Since 1945. Tony Judd, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Tony, what do you make of the broad exit poll numbers that we're seeing? Tony Blair back in power, smaller majority. How do you interpret it?
I think it's worth bearing in mind that this is the third time that Blair has won an election without significantly increasing Labour's share of the real vote. This is not a man who has increased his party's support so much as seen the opposition totally fail to build theirs up. And in that sense, he's very much like Margaret Thatcher, who didn't so much win elections as watch the opposition lose them.
And yet, I mean, he did bring Labour back out of the wilderness, or so it seemed all those years ago. They'd been out of power for 19 years when Tony Blair came in. That looked like an accomplishment.
Well, it's an accomplishment, there's no question, but it's worth remembering, and this is part of the background to his present unpopularity, that Blair didn't do that on his own. As one of the people he was speaking to said, Blair really stands on Thatcher's shoulders. It was Thatcher who both destroyed the old Labour Party and transformed Britain in such a way that Blair is able to take advantage of the changes without having to bring them about himself, something that he wouldn't have been able to do. And also, he inherited a Labour Party which was itself transformed by two previous leaders, Neil Kinnock and John Smith, that became electable. And really, all he had to do was lead it to power. He didn't in himself undertake the transformation. He's therefore, I think, rather overestimated as a figure in British politics.
Geoffrey Wheatcroft, we understand that he came after Margaret Thatcher. She did a lot of the heavy earth moving, taking down state enterprises that Tony Blair was then able to work with. He has been, yes, perhaps unpopular himself often, but the polls we see this time show a degree of unpopularity that's quite remarkable for someone winning a third term. Is that essentially, primarily, unpopularity built around the Iraq War?
That is the primary factor, yes. I mean, there are various other reasons for his unpopularity, which, as I have to say, is again, is paradoxical, that not only many people, commentators, beat up on him, as you say, but the opinion polls regularly say that he is a very unpopular individual political leader, and yet he is going to win this election. What Tony Judd has just said is absolutely true. I mean, in 1997, Labour were going to win the election under anybody. The Tories had simply disintegrated, particularly. The Conservatives won the 1992 election, very much to many people's surprise. But then within a matter of months, they really fell apart because of the financial collapse over Black Wednesday, when sterling was driven out of the European monetary system. And then the Tories after that were, in the phrase, in office but not in power. And it was just a matter of time before the election had to come, and they were going to lose it. 8 years ago, this is not really quantifiable, but I'm convinced this is the case, that 8 years ago, on the 2nd of May, 1997, there was an unmistakable mood of elation. You could almost feel it in the air in London. But it was not a positive mood of elation, because we had got Tony Blair and New Labour in office. It was a mood of enormous relief at having got rid of the Tories after 18 years, which is far too long for any party to be in office. I mean, the country was fed up with the Tories by then. Mm. They were fed up with themselves. They had to go. And since then, there has been a myth of the, not invincibility, but the political skill of Tony Blair, which is to some extent false. I mean, just to take a few figures, I mean, in 1997, Tony Blair won a landslide general election with fewer popular votes than John Major, the Conservative leader, had gained in 1992. And in 2001, 4 years ago, Blair won another huge parliamentary majority with fewer popular votes than Neil Kinnock had won in 1992. I mean, the turnout collapsed between 1997 and 2001. We're going to see tonight whether turnout... The British used to be extremely enthusiastic voters. 50 years ago, 1950, 84% of them voted at the general election. And that held up in the 70s. In 1997, it was still 72%. It then collapsed to below 60%, 59%, and the science so far this evening is that it won't come up much above that. So there's, whatever with Tony Blair himself, there's a general mood of disillusionment with politics and politicians.
And yet, he comes out on top once again. Geoffrey Wheatcroft joining us from Bath tonight. Thank you so much for being with us.
No, not at all.
Geoffrey Wheatcroft in Bath, England. We're joined now from London by Gerard Baker, U.S. editor of The Times of London. Gerard Baker, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
You're watching exit polls and first results come in. What's your sense of how this outcome is being received? A sharply reduced majority? Any sense yet of how Labour sees it, how Tony Blair may respond?
It's clear, with these very early stages so far, what we have in the 2.5 hours now since the polls closed in Britain, we have one exit poll which has been taken and which suggests a sharply reduced majority, and all we've had are four, I think, maybe five constituency results. As you know, there are 646 constituencies.
Right.
So we are in very, very early stages. We're basically going on the exit poll. But it looks like, if you take the exit poll, even if it's close to being right, and you add that to the first results that we've had, which are very unrepresentative, but which are probably pointing to a trend. It does look like Labour's majority is going to be significantly reduced. It's going to be, they went into this election with a majority of 160. It's clearly going to be halved at least, which is a substantial reversal, although, as you said, it is still a victory. It is a third unprecedented Labour victory. It's still going to be a solid majority, a majority that will enable the Labour government to continue in power for 4 years. And it is, and I slightly differ with the few views we've just heard. I think Tony Blair's role in transforming the Labour Party's fortunes cannot be underestimated at all. And, you know, if you think about what the Labour Party, where the Labour Party was after the 1992 election, where it once again, for the fourth straight election, was defeated, the mood in the Labour Party was one of extraordinary, extraordinary depression, and there was serious, serious political literature published which asked the question, was the Labour Party now finished forever? And we are now in a position where Labour has just won or is about to win its third straight general election with an enormous majority. So I think Tony Blair's role has been absolutely critical and it shouldn't be underestimated.
Well, tell us more about that. You've written that American Democratic Party operatives have flocked to the UK to watch this election. Bob Shrum, Howard Dean's man, Joe Trippi, over there. And you said Democrats, even those who oppose the war, admire the way Blair has done something they have signally failed to do, take the main left-of-center party out of the wilderness and fashion it into the most effective electoral machine in Western politics. How do you describe the credit you give Tony Blair? What is it he's done with the party in policy terms, in political terms, that you're admiring of?
He has quite simply made it electable again. As I said, in 1992, when John Major was elected Prime Minister, it was the fourth consecutive defeat for the Labour Party. It was the fourth time that the Labour Party had scored significantly below 40% of the vote. It was a party that was in real trauma. Now, of course, it's true, as a couple of your guests have said,
yes.
that there were fact that the Tory party after, and the Tory government after 1992 went into a terrible decline for a number of reasons, and it's probably true that a leader other than Tony Blair might have led Labour to victory. I would wager that it's inconceivable that another Labour leader would have led Labour to a victory of a majority of 179 seats, which is what he managed to do in 1997, the largest majority for any party, and that any Labour party, the Labour Party has ever achieved,
one of the largest
majorities in British history. And in fact, what you're seeing tonight, I mean, here's what's interesting about this, that although this is going to be a bad night in relative terms for Labour, there's no question about that, what you are still seeing tonight is the legacy of that 97, that what Tony Blair did between 94 and 97, which was to make the Labour Party electable once again, give them such an enormous enormous climb up the hill, put them into such an enormously dominant position that even when they suffer the reverse that they are clearly suffering tonight, they are still going to be way ahead in parliamentary terms, way ahead of their political opponents.
So to the extent that that is his doing, how did he do it?
He essentially turned Labour around from being a party that was seen as being a tax and spend party, a party that would fought the 92 general election, the last one it lost, on a campaign in which it said it would raise taxes and raise public spending. It was seen still as a left-wing party. Again, it had moved, there's no question about this, from the extreme left-wing party that had been in the 1980s, but it was still seen by middle England, those sort of critical voters, kind of a little bit like sort of Reagan Democrats that you have in the United States. Mm-hmm. Ordinary, you know, people who had voted Labour a long time ago in the past, but had been very turned off by a message that was left-wing, that was tax and spend, that was essentially kind of politically internationally isolationist. He turned that around. He made the Labour Party respectable again. He made it respectable to vote Labour. He actually made it rather attractive and rather trendy to vote Labour to some people's irritation, actually, in the mid-1990s. And the convincing of middle England, of the average voter in seats, you know, in constituencies which had been traditionally conservative constituencies, as well as old ones that had been Labour many years ago, where people said, actually, this is a party I can vote for, I can trust them, they're not going to put my taxes up, they're not going to increase spending, they're not going to increase the size of the state enormously, they are actually a respectable, reasonable, middle-of-the-road centrist party, and I like what I see. And that was down to Tony Blair. That had not happened before Tony Blair became leader.
Gerard Baker, in London, give us a sense of the pummeling that Tony Blair has taken for the Iraq war. It's something something kind of beyond the scope of American comprehension, maybe, given the effort in this country to kind of stay with the troops and stay on board. Describe it for us.
Yeah, it is serious. I mean, I spent the last couple of weeks traveling around the country, and I have been taken aback, I think, talking to people. You get a much better sense than just from the opinion polls of actually how angry people are about the Iraq war. Traditional Labour vote, what he's lost tonight, I think, is a sizable number. We don't know exactly how many, but a sizable number of Labour voters who were appalled at the decision to go to war, appalled at the idea of supporting George Bush, an American president whom they frankly despise, and a set of policies that they despise, and who simply cannot bring themselves, given what's happened, to vote for the Labour Party again. And they have been given an alternative at this election by the third party in British politics, the Liberal Democrats, who campaigned very aggressively on an anti-war platform, who are essentially have put themselves now to the left of the Labour Party. They used to be the centre party. They're now, in a sense, on most issues now, on tax and spending and on particularly on Iraq, they are, if you like, to the left of the Labour Party. And he has lost, Blair has lost the support of a lot of those traditional Labour voters who have gone, who have deserted him, either not voted or have gone and voted for the Liberal Democrats. And it's that that is going to lead to this significant reduction in his majority tonight.
He has been taken to task all over, much more severely, it would seem, than George Bush for the missing weapons of mass destruction. Tony Blair called Tony Blyer, as in liar. There was the whole issue of the Attorney General's advice and whether or not he was told it was not would not be legal for the UK to go. Tony Blur, the other kind of funny thing, called the American poodle. What about his stance on the Iraq war in this new term and his special relationship with George Bush, the special UK relationship with the US? Is that likely to stay as high?
I don't think it is. I think the story, really the story of tonight, if things head on as they are at the moment, is probably, it was a very unusual election campaign, this, because Blair had already promised before the election campaign that this would be his last campaign. This is most unusual in British politics. We don't have term limits, as you know. But the Prime Minister had said, I think realizing, you know, the degree of malaise and fatigue with him and the opposition to the Iraq war, he had already said, he promised that he wasn't going to run again at the end of this next term, i.e. in 4 years' time, that this would be his last election, this would be his last term as Prime Minister. It is generally, and indeed one of the reasons I think Labour has managed to hold on probably here is because that promise was made, essentially, and that people expect Tony Blair to stand down sometime in the next 4 years. I think what this result will almost certainly have done tonight will be to have accelerated Tony Blair's departure. If he does do as, again, relatively badly as the polls suggest, if his majority is more than halved, which seems highly possible, then I think there will be a strong pressure in the Labour Party to say, look, you've already said you're going. You clearly have cost us a lot of seats in this election. It's time for you to go. And, you know, we're not going to force you out tomorrow or next week or next month, but we think sooner rather than later, which means perhaps in a year or so, it's time for you to move on. And then we'll have a new leader. We'll have a new Prime Minister who will be Gordon Brown, the current Chancellor of the Exchequer, the equivalent of the Treasury Secretary in the United States, who is interesting. I mean, he's an interesting character. I mean, I think he is in many ways seen as being more traditional Labour, but in fact, I think one of the ironies will be he'll actually turn out to be rather more, very much in the same mold as Tony Blair's when it comes to foreign policy. He'll cleave pretty closely to the United States, and he'll certainly be pretty skeptical about Europe. So in a funny way, I think it will be easier for Labour under Gordon Brown, who will be the Prime Minister, as I said, in a relatively short period of time. It will be easier for Labour to remain close with the United States under a new leader than it would under the current leader.
Because Tony Blair has been painted as the poodle of Washington.
Yeah, exactly. And Gordon Brown won't be. There won't, and in any case, we won't have, one assumes, anything like the kind of traumas. There won't be another Iraq war, one assumes, in the next couple of years. So it'll be a lot easier for a new Prime Minister to come in and manage relations with the United States in any case. And secondly, it will be easier for someone who comes in with a fresh mandate, a fresh Prime Minister, to come in and to be able to say, look, I need to work with the United States, I'm going to work with other people too, but I am not tainted by this allegation that I lied and that I misled the British people and that I have deceived them. In fact, I come in with a completely clean slate, and I can start afresh with a new relationship with the United States.
So this is a fascinating prospect for Americans to hear. Tony Blair comes in, historic re-election, and you're saying within a year or so, he may well be gone.
I would think that's the light. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, that's not definite, but I think the way the political stars are aligned, if the election goes on as it is tonight, it would be very likely that Blair would be gone within the first half of the next parliament, which means within the next 2 years. And as I say, I would probably say the likely time is in about a year's time.
Any question of the UK sticking with the Iraq military deployment?
No question about that whatsoever. Labour have made it very clear. One of the more interesting things that emerged in this campaign was, even as Blair was being heavily criticised over Iraq, and at the stage where it got very, very, very tricky for Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, as I said, the man who is more or less anointed as the next Prime Minister, came out with a very strong defence of the Iraq war, said he completely and utterly agreed with it. He wouldn't have done anything different from what Tony Blair has done for the last 4 years. He would support, he believed in the Iraq war. He believed in the principle of, you know, pushing for democracy in Iraq. He would keep US, British troops there. So there's no question of that happening anytime.
Gerard Baker, there's much more we want to learn tonight. Please stick with us there in London. Gerard Baker, with the Times of London, joining us tonight from the UK. We're talking tonight about the British at the polls and the future, the fate of Tony Blair. He's back for a third term tonight. How long that lasts? Another question. You can join the conversation. How much does the special US-UK relationship matter to the United States? And given the anti-Americanism in the streets there, how much does it depend on Blair in office? 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the British at the polls and the outcome there. Exit polls indicating Tony Blair will come back for an historic third consecutive term as Labour Prime Minister, but with a sharply reduced majority in the British Parliament, and after a campaign that has been terrifically rough on the British Prime Minister, his standing in the opinion polls not so great. His victory at the electoral polls affirmed tonight, but a much smaller majority than he had last time around. We're joined tonight from London by Gerard Baker, U.S. editor for the Times of London. You can join the conversation as well. Why has Tony Blair's Labour Party sailed on to victories while Clinton's Democrats have foundered in recent years? And what about Blair's international agenda beyond Iraq? Aid to Africa, a hard push for peace in the Middle East, support for international law and organizations. Finally, I guess, do U.S. and U.K. interests line up in Blair's last term? Do they line up beyond Tony Blair? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. David is calling from Pittsboro, North Carolina. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I've been following the elections over here in North Carolina, and
yes.
I've watched Tony Blair for quite some time, since 97, and I am a Labour supporter.
Mm.
And what's always struck me about Tony Blair is that he's just an accidental Labour person. Really, I think that Tony Blair's background, where he comes from, and his father's politics, and his university education at Oxford,
yes,
makes him an accidental Labour man. That it was the rebellious thing to do, that to join the Labour Party when he went to university. And I think that's reflected in the policies that he's made the Labour Party adopt. He's adopted policies with the Labour Party that the Tory Party, the Conservatives, could only have dreamed of.
But David, here he is re-elected. He's been in power for years now. He's made a lot of these changes, and though he personally is unpopular in the polls, many Britons appear happy with the economic results, do they not?
The economic results, he has done some good things, like the giving independence to the Bank of England, no doubt. But some of the policies that he's brought in are actually quite unpopular. He's brought in policies that were first advocated by the Tory parties, things like the private finance initiatives for hospital building, which will actually, in the long term, prove tremendously burdensome on the British taxpayer. Also, things like the privatisation of the tube system in London, the underground system,
right,
things like that.
And so you're a Labour man, but he hardly looks like a full Labour leader to you. David, let us pick it up, and thank you very much for your call. Gerard Baker, I wish you'd take us into that and some of the domestic issues around Tony Blair's long-time push to this middle way, third way. How do Labour, staunch Labour people see him now? Where has he brought the country?
I should just say, by the way, since we've been on the air, that we've started to get a few more actual results through,
well,
and Labour have now lost their first seat in on quite a big vote against them in a London seat. So it does look as though things are very much going against Tony Blair, although, as you say, he will probably end up with a majority. Well, David makes I think it's a fair point. It's a criticism that a lot of Labour people have of Tony Blair, and I think there's no question that it's another reason why a lot of traditional Labour voters have deserted Labour today, as they clearly have, because they do regard Tony Blair. One of the jokes is that he's Tory Blair, which is, Tory is
right.
the
conservative
slightly
party.
Derogatory term for the Conservative Party, and he has followed some conservative policies. But that, of course, is what has helped Labour get re-elected. That he's followed much more policies that Labour would have rejected in the past. Some of the private initiatives that that David was talking about, he's done thing one a very very controversial, very unpopular thing, which he did in just a few months ago, was he pushed through a measure in Parliament that students would have to pay. I mean, for much much more than they have in the past for their university education. As you know, again in Britain, almost all university education is public, and almost all of it is paid for by the state. You don't have tuition fees. You don't pay, large sums of money. Well, that's changing, and that's changed because of Tony Blair and his government. They've pushed that through.
But still far less than people pay in the United States.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to say. But against all of that, which is true, which are fair criticisms, if you like, from the left, which they don't like. I mean, you may agree with those policies or disagree with them. They're certainly not left-wing policies. Against that, he has also, David misses out on some important things which Labour would defend very strongly. I mean, for example, he came in 1997 and immediately enacted a minimum wage, something the Conservatives had always opposed. A minimum wage, which is actually quite a significant figure. That was a long-standing traditional thing that the Labour Party had wanted to have.
May I just ask you, what is the minimum wage there? How would it translate into dollars?
It is about $10 an hour. I'd have to check the precise figure. $10 an hour.
But please go on. Sorry to interrupt.
No. And they have put a lot of money into the National Health Service, which is, of course, we have a system of socialized medicine here. And although, what I said earlier, that one of the reasons Blair had been so successful was because he'd got Labour away from tax and spend, the one area where they have actually increased taxation a little bit, and they've done it specifically to pay for the health service, which has been a long-cherished institution of the left wing. It was established by the Labour government in 1945, the famously sort of left-wing socialist government in 1945. Labour has bolstered that with extra spending on that. Labour has put more spending into things like education, other public services. So it's a little unfair to paint a picture of Tony Blair as having done only conservative things. He clearly hasn't. He clearly, and indeed this has been, frankly, the political genius of Tony Blair, is that at the same time as spending more money on the health service and spending more money on education, implementing the minimum wage, he has been able to do some of these things that David objects to, like introducing some private money into some public spending, introducing the private forcing students to pay for university education, and of course perhaps above all supporting the Iraq War. So he has steered a pretty clever line down the middle of British politics, and that's why he was so successful.
So is that the special sauce here, that Britons have been relatively happy with their economy, with an improved level of public services? That's what they're really voting for?
Yeah, that's why in the end Labour has won. Although, again, as your earlier, I think Tony Jute and Geoffrey Wheatcroft were pointing out, Labour are going to be returned tonight, not only with a reduced majority, but with a very small share of the popular vote. They're going to probably get back in with, according to the figures so far, maybe 37% of the popular vote. Extraordinarily low number, the lowest number that any government will have been elected with anything like a reasonable majority in something like 100 years. So this is not in any way a resounding vote of confidence for him. And given that the economy has been strong, given that the level of public spending on the health service and other things has been pretty strong too, it is a remarkable result in many ways that Labour can only still manage to get the support of 37% of the electorate. And again, the answer, I think the simple answer is it comes down very largely to Iraq, to popular frustration with Iraq, to the left, as I said, to sort of traditional Labour voters deserting Labour over Iraq. And I think that is what makes cast such a cloud now over the rest of his prime ministership.
Now, the next big issue, I suppose, for Blair is Europe. I mean, it's always been sitting there, but in just a few weeks, France will go to the polls to vote on the EU constitution. If they vote it down, it kind of sidetracks the whole thing. If they vote in favor, then UK is next in line. Am I right?
Not quite next in line, but you're right, it's pretty close. We have the French vote in 3 weeks' time, the Dutch vote actually shortly after that, and there'll be some other votes as well later in the fall here. But yes, I mean, this is another kind of part of Tony Blair's nightmare, quite frankly, after this obviously disappointing result tonight. He has to come and face, and he's pledged to try and get British support for, in a referendum, British support for the European Constitution. Now, the British people at the moment seem extremely hostile to that. Opinion polls show opposition to the European Constitution running at something like 2-1. So he's going to come fresh out of this significant setback in this election here. He's going to hope and pray, I would think, in Downing Street that the French do reject the Constitution, because if they don't, it means it will come to Britain. It will almost certainly come to Britain sometime early next year. And as I said, as I was saying before, this will be another very important factor in the timing of Tony Blair's decisions to stand down. Because if he fights that referendum and loses it, then in about a year's time, which is when people would expect it to happen, then he's finished. I mean, then nobody believes for a minute that he could stay on after that.
We're at 1-800-423-8255. Michael is calling from Sharon, Massachusetts. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
For much of the day, I had a kind of exasperation that there's been a fundamental misrepresentation of the British electoral system. In that we talk about a third term for Blair, what we're really talking about is a third term for the Labour Party, which is led by Tony Blair.
And you can hear it being filtered through the American kind of presidential framework as you hear about it in the US media, and yet he is at the head of the party.
He is the head of the party, but it raises kind of two questions. One, a very broad question about the accuracy of US coverage of overseas politics generally, if we can't even get the coverage of an English-speaking government right. But secondly, and perhaps more pertinently, I think, as one of your guests said, that Blair could well be ousted and Labour remains in power. So it's not that the term ends when Blair goes.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, the question then becomes, what does this mean for the US-UK relations if, as your guest says, the most likely person to step up then is Gordon Brown, who I think is fundamentally different to Tony Blair.
You don't expect he would just coast along with the same cozy, even lapdog relationship?
I think he has been the person, for instance, somebody mentioned about the review of debt in the developing world, and particularly in Africa. Gordon Brown was at the forefront of that. Tony Blair leapt on to that much later on. And I think Gordon Brown is more the standard bearer for the John Smith. And I think it's John Smith who died, unfortunately, before he had a chance to lead the party into an election. But John Smith really made the Labour Party electable again. Tony Blair was in the right place at the right time.
Don't apply an American lens here, and you're quite right, and I think we've been right on the detail here tonight. This is a party victory. Tony Blair stands at the head, but is not guaranteed to stay there. Michael, thank you very much for your call. Gerard Baker, what about Gordon Brown? There's a lot of talk here that he bailed Tony Blair out in recent weeks. They've had a off-again, on-again friendship, lots of rivalry there, but he stood up pretty strong for Tony Blair in the home stretch of this campaign. Who is he if he comes to power in a year or so, as you suggest he might? What will Americans see?
Again, I think it would be a mistake to read into Gordon Brown's almost inevitable accession to the leadership of the Labour Party, and therefore to be Prime Minister sometime in the next few years. It would be a mistake to read that as a sort of return to an old-fashioned Labour Party. In fact, Blair and Brown have always been thought of very much as a double act. I mean, they were very much, when the Labour Party started to seriously kind of try and change course in the 1980s and the early 1990s, they were very much together. They were the two people who were called the modernizers. They were the two people who were trying to drive the Labour Party down a more electorally attractive route by getting away from old-fashioned tax and spend and the kind of things that we've talked about. And Brown was very, Brown and Blair were absolutely hand in glove on that. There wasn't much of a difference between them. Now, to a very large extent, what we've seen in the last 10 years between the two is a lot of personal tension between them, because Brown believes that he was more or less promised by Tony Blair that Tony Blair would stand down after a certain amount of time as Prime Minister to make way for Gordon Brown, and he hasn't done that yet, and there is a strong sense among Brown and his supporters that they've been betrayed by Tony Blair, and that threatened to bubble over it several times in the last few years into an all-out fight between the two of them. But in the end, they both realized, I think, this time around, that it was in both their interest to get back together again, to fight this election together. Brown is the Chancellor of the Exchequer, as I say, which is the man who's responsible for economic policy, and the economy has been very successful for the last few years under Labour, and so it was necessary for him to be at the forefront of the campaign if Labour was going to campaign on the big issue that was clearly made it more popular, that clearly made it likely to win the election. So I think it would be wrong to see Brown as radically different from Tony Blair. Brown will be, and what's he is to some extent, but there's no question he's, you know, that he comes from a slightly more old-fashioned Labour perspective, but it's a pretty marginal difference. It's not huge, and I would argue that when he becomes Prime Minister, he will reposition himself pretty radically, to eliminate any possible doubt that he might favour some old-fashioned Labour approach. He will change back. He will very much emphasise his new Labour, that he was part of the project that changed Labour. He won't be a tax and spend guy. He won't be anti-American. He won't favour the left over the right. And I think people will be, to some extent, surprised by how much continuity there will be between Blair and Brown, and rather than discontinuity.
If Blair should go. Peter's calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks. Yeah, I was just calling in because I hadn't heard in this part of the program expressed the views of, from the American side, particularly as I'm a Democrat. And admire Tony Blair a great deal. It should be known he's suffered a setback, relatively speaking, tonight. But a lot of us here on this side of the ocean have a great deal of admiration for him, and he reminds us a lot of Bill Clinton in '92, and with his intelligence, his confidence, his command of the issues, his good humor, his ability to speak on his feet. He even reminds us, I'm old enough to remember, mm-hmm. John Kennedy. We would love to have his like leading the Democratic Party in this country.
Peter, let me ask you,
he come over here.
Exactly. I was just going to say, but for all that, he's British. Is it just a personality issue, or do you see Blair policies that the Democrats in the U.S. might pick up on to try and get back in the game?
I don't know that policies exactly transfer. I don't think you could probably get elected president in this country with the social safety net assumptions that any British, even a Tory in Britain, would. But
right.
What we could certainly use is someone of the intelligence and command of the issues that Tony Blair has, that Bill Clinton had. That's what we could use.
We got it. Peter, thank you very much for your call. Gerard Baker, you're in Washington much of the time. What do you think the Democrats are looking, the U.S. Democrats are looking at in Blair's victory? What might they learn from him?
I think what it is different. Your caller is absolutely right. And some of the big issues that are in the U.S. at the moment over, judicial nominations or
homosexuality, abortion.
Exactly, the role of religion and all of that kind of stuff, that really doesn't apply in British politics. But it is true that Blair has, above all else, the Blair-Clinton analogy is quite a good one. I mean, when Blair came, Clinton came in 1992, 93, Blair came in 1994, both their parties had been out of office for a very long time, out of the White House anyway, in the Democrats' case, for a very long time. And they had seemed to be, with Dukakis in 1988 and with Mondale in 1984, too out of the mainstream, too left-wing, too liberal, obviously in your terms. Labour was exactly the same with Michael Foot in 1983 and Neil Kinnock in 1987 and 1992, and Blair came in and repositioned and very consciously actually imitated the Democrats. The irony here is that he imitated Bill Clinton and the Democratic Party rather than the other way around. And it was a question of positioning, of image, of turning that party around from being an unpopular liberal left-of-center party that people didn't feel safe, comfortable voting for, and he has done that. It was about image and positioning and about language as much as anything, too. Mm. So, but whether or not there are any lessons now, I think, to be honest, we may be at the end of that period. I think we may, it's, as I said, partly because there are such different issues in terms of policy between the United States and the UK now, and partly because I think Blair has run his course, to be honest. I think I wouldn't underestimate at all, and I agree with the caller that he has been an extraordinary political figure of enormous consequence for the Labour Party. I disagree there completely with your earlier guest. I think he has been a really significant figure, but I think sort of rather sadly, if you liked him, I think we're entering the twilight of Tony Blair's political career.
A fascinating note on this night of his re-election or his party's return to power, and his at its head, to a historic third term. Gerard Baker with the Times of London. In London, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.